Very good. I've been having a lot of trash build up in my apartment building, and I've been trying to figure out how I'm going to get it cleaned up. So, of course, as a good citizen of my apartment building, I sent a message to the property manager, and I said, "Hey, guys, could you clean up the trash? Because there's trash everywhere. And what are we, animals? Signed, apartment 216. And I got a response back. "No, we're not going to clean up the trash. We don't care about you. We don't know when the trash machine comes and takes it and it gets spilled everywhere." I'm like, "Yeah? I'm not going to pay my fucking rent until I see that trash cleaned up. What do you think about that?" They're like, "That's not how it works. We get your money and we don't have to provide services. So you signed the lease, right?" I'm like, "Yeah." "Okay, so you don't pay the money, we evict you. Who cares if you get the trash out of there or not? Go fuck yourself." Like, all right, that wasn't what I was expecting. So now I'm just parking a different part of the parking lot, not near the trash cans. So I feel like I didn't really get a lot of satisfaction out of that. But, you know, they say in the books about negotiating, you know, they got your money, so go fuck yourself, I guess. You know, like I was talking to my bank and I said, you know, I see there was a $6 fee to have a checking account. And I told them, "I'll take my business elsewhere. I'll go across the street to Wells Fargo. What do you think about that?" They're like, "Yeah, well, their checking account fee is $8 a month. So again, who cares? Get off. Stop wasting our time." I'm like, "Well, I'd like to have the fee waived." And they just go, they hang up the phone. "We don't need your business. You have no money in your checking account. All you have is crippling debt. What do you want us to do? We're not going to do anything for you. You're not a Chase preferred customer or whatever." Yeah, I probably never will be. I do. This is true. Actually, all that was true, but this is even more true. I put comedian on my taxes. You can bet I got audited. It's my own fault, guys. All right, I'm going to bring up your next comedian. Are you ready? Yeah!
Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. This is episode 302 this guy is a pillar of the community. When Alden Schaub stops hosting a mic, he, you know what I mean? It falls apart.
That's true.
It falls apart like a house of cards. People think they can replace him, and it's like, "Oh, this time, this, you know, I'll just show up at this time, at this place, and try to replace him." No, the comics follow you, because you're fair, you're a sweetie.
Thanks.
And, you know, as soon as I came here, you're like one of the first people I ran into in the Austin comedy scene. And every time I hang out with you, you're nice, you're fair, you're doing the Lord's work.
Well, I'm better at hosting right now than I am at comedy, so that helps me.
You're good at showing up.
Well, yeah, if I was to put those things why the mics are successful, the ones that I participate in, the other comic usually has it about 80% there already. And I just show up and do the other 20, which is if it's being consistent, if it's like just putting up the poster, just making sure I got an extra piece of equipment or whatever it is. And so then, you know, just that extra person can make the difference. I mean, and so I'm always like, you know, do I want to start my own mic? Well, not really. My kind of mandate has been I'm going to be the support guy. I'll be the fill-in host. I'll be the extra guy. And then I just get offered a lot of spots. I mean, because then again, it does end up working out when I'm doing it, not because I'm some awesome host. Again, it's just I'm very consistent, you know. And that it's meaningful to people because, man, you show up at a mic and it's not going that week, you just like can't. You just get enraged. I mean, you know,
devastating. Oh, and yeah. That's been happening to me. You know, I will name this. I showed up to Shenanigans on a Wednesday. It was on Comedy Wham. And then, like, even for the date, you know, Comedy Wham not only has every month, but also date. Some guy wants to talk to you. Let's hit pause. All right. Yeah. So I showed up to the mic. It's like, you know, if you have to take an Uber there, luckily I have a car. I drove there. But it's like it takes gas, energy, effort, and when I could have been going somewhere else. So, like, that talent, you know, Comedy Wham is a big deal. And I used to live in Los Angeles. There's a guy in Los Angeles called Jake Kroger who runs the ComedyBureau.com. Mm. That guy runs a tight ship. If it's on Comedy Bureau, he's call, re-verified the host of the mic, make sure it's happening. And, oh, it's Groundhog's Day. Don't assume that it's not going to happen because it's Groundhog's Day. Don't assume it's not going to happen because it's President's Day or Christmas. If it's on the list, it's on the list. Do it. You have to do it. So he runs a tight ship, but
I learned that from running my own trivia shows because, like, if you tell people it's not going to be on 1 week, they assume, they're like, then they get a little, oh, well, it's raining, is it going to be on? And then all of a sudden, the crowd goes away. So you're make it clear, you know, unless it's like Christmas or something, it's going. And always put rain or shine, you know, we're doing it no matter what. And people like that, because again, for that kind of a show, that's their Monday. They're expecting that. And the same with comedy. They're like we got the Sand Jack tonight. Mm-hmm. If people show up and the door's locked, they're going to be pissed.
They want
their time. They came down here. They made it. You know, they told their mother, I got to get to the Sand Jack. You know, like, so, you know, but that's what's made it strong. And then two, we've got three hosts. You know, so it's me, it's Mike Dragon, and it's Nick Roche. And so there's always one of us going to be here who's not being booked or out of town or something. And then if two guys are out of town, we bring in a guest host. So it'll always be two hosts.
Oh, okay.
And that's made it stronger because, again, we're all trying to get booked. We're all trying to do other projects and things or go visit your family or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's never going to be a week where we don't have it.
Yeah.
Unless 1 week there was a private party here, so that was okay. But, like, as far as that, we're never going to miss it, you know. Mm-hmm. And people like that, I mean.
But you got to spread the word out the day it's not so that people don't get confused. I know you had, I don't want to get too much into the weeds, muckraking Alden Schaub's life, but recently you made a very difficult Amazon purchase. You bought a laptop.
That's
and
correct.
There was a lot of choices. Has it come in the mail? Did you make the right choice?
Oh, yeah. I think the only regret I have is that I should have got a larger hard drive.
Okay. What did you get?
Well, I got a 128, and I thought, well, that's pretty good. I immediately filled it with, like, videos. When I do a Connect 4 video now, the original video is, like, 4 gigs, and the, like, processed video is almost a gig.
Yeah.
And I've done, like, 10 of them now, and it's, like, there's 50 gigs right there. It's like, so I had to get my external hard drive going, and then I filled that up.
Oh, yeah.
So, again, it's, like...
I got a 12-terabyte one a couple years ago, and it was, like, $500.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, you know...
Well, I'm sitting there in the morning of, I ordered it, you know, and I'm like, okay, they said they're going to bring it between 8 and midnight.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sitting, I'm waiting. I check in at 9, there's nobody, you know.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
Then I go and take a shower or whatever, and I check at like 11, and there it was. And like, no knock or nothing, and I'm like.
Oh, it's just outside.
Yeah, so I tried to get it delivered to the Amazon locker.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It was too big.
Oh, okay.
So, because like, I'm like, why would I ever have it delivered to my porch? Like, so they got me again, it's like.
Yeah, you're making a $1,200 purchase, then it's just they lean it outside your window. You know?
They're like, oh, here's this piece of fine technology. We're just like put it out in the rain.
Yeah.
Like, hopefully the guy didn't rattle it too much. You know, and you're like, well, luckily the box was a little bit insulated. So yeah, it ended up working out. But like, the chances that it wasn't going to work out were not zero.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, man, I'm throwing my hard-earned money at that.
You run one of the hottest mics in Austin, Texas, and that's the Lucky Duck. I've been there once now, but I mean, there's like 60 people on the list, 70 people on the list. I mean, sure. It's nuts.
Well, our top show, we had 77. And so it went from 6. Well, you know, the sign up is 6, starts at 8. Went from 8 till 2 in the morning, and I had to turn one comic away because they were like, we need to go home.
Right. Yeah.
So Riley Gilmore, and he came back the next week, and I told him, any spot you want.
I like that guy.
Yeah.
I like Riley. All right.
Well, for me, the Lucky Duck is great. Like, I get a chance to write a tag for every single comic. I see the comics in town every Wednesday. So, like,
yeah,
it's good. I
mean, what's like the biggest comic that's rolled through the Lucky Duck?
Well, I'd
get
say
celebrity drop-ins.
Like Hunter Duncan was there. You know, mm-hmm. I consider him a local celebrity, definitely. I don't know. Some of the people I don't always know. Like, I haven't had. Like Tony Hinchcliffe or somebody come through, but like, mm-hmm. you know, it's mostly just local guys. I mean,
mm-hmm. Jason Rouse and Yoshi Obayashi were
Yoshi
there.
Yoshi was there, yep.
Hilarious guy. All right. So we talked about scheduling. We talked about keeping your calendar. I talked about that. I don't want to throw shade, but I was thinking about doing a mic or getting something going at a particular venue. And then I went to their website.
Sure.
And they were promoting shows from 2 years ago. And then when I clicked the calendar, it was like 4 years ago. And it's like, if you run only a comedy theater, the only thing that matters is the schedule and then the buy tickets button. And the buy and everything. I mean, I don't know what's going on. How do you let that go?
Well, and what's nice again from my position as the fill-in host, I don't do any of that. I just am like, hey, you already got it all figured out, and I'll help you out.
Right,
so
right.
So I avoid all that. And then when I'm actually on the thing, I make my own poster. So, like, there's the, like, for the Sanjak, for instance, there's a poster for the show that's the official one, and then there's one I make.
Right, right.
Because then I'm saying I'm at that one. And right, then I'm sort of, like, putting my stamp on it. Like, so, like, in that, that particular place is somewhat disorganized, so I haven't tried to get a show in there. But I've heard even they're cutting back on some of the comedy. So it's like, what are you going to do? Like,
right, right, right. Because I was like, I have this show that I want to do that's like sketch plus stand-ups.
True.
And because I've written this huge catalog of sketches that I kind of like, I'm like, I need to do something with this. Like, let me do it in a weekly show and like burn one sketch a week at the show or every other week or something. So now it's like, all right, what venue? For me, I don't care what venue, if it's a dive bar, if it's, you know, the greatest comedy club in the world, I don't care about any of that. What I care about is when it's on my website, erichollerbach.com, I click on the bar's official website, it's there, and then the calendar is updated.
Sure.
I care about nothing else but that. So when I go to an only comedy theater, only right. comedy theater, and they have zero calendar, I honestly don't know. And I know someone might say, oh, well, we put it on Facebook, we put it here. You know, the Facebook is really, what? Not everyone signs into that. Why not have the .com? comedyclub.com,
sure.
Santa Cruz Theater.com. Why not have that have a calendar that's updated?
Well, you know,
I don't understand.
All the kids are on Instagram now. You know, I found that out. Like with the sketches, for instance, I made like 35 sketches. I put them all up on YouTube. Nobody's seen them. But now I'm putting shit up on Instagram. People are watching it.
Oh, okay.
So my thing is, like, if you want to do sketches, you know, you might consider the Fallout Theater, too. They came back recently.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I'm thinking about trying to do a show over there, because, like...
I was hearing... Katie Lois is telling me about that.
Yeah, like, Ty Wynn did a show at Santa Cruz. It was the Comedy Home Movies.
Mm-hmm.
So all the people bring in sketches, and you watch it, and then you do, like, a little bit of stand-up after.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun. Also, I mean, it wasn't a huge turnout for the audience, but, like... I met a lot of the other content creators.
Right.
And then I met Ryan Montavo there. I'd met him a little bit before, but then I realized, oh, he's really taking it seriously. So now I've been helping him out with his Help Wanted stuff. So, like, just getting those people together to kind of mm-hmm. network, I thought was valuable, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd like to do a show like that. And I talked to Ty, and he's like, yeah, I'm kind of busy. So I said, maybe I'll host it. And I thought maybe I'll try to go over the Fallout. And just,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
maybe do, like, once a
month. All right, maybe we can talk about that, because I'm exactly thinking the same thing you're thinking.
Yeah.
And I want to film the sketch, too. But
well, and plus, they just kind of opened up, so probably looking for new stuff.
Sure, sure. Ethics. Fairness. What does it take to be a good open mic gatekeeper? Has anyone tried to big time yet?
Oh, constantly, yeah, sure. But, I mean, my thing is, I'm like, well, I personally like to run an uncapped mic. Because, again, I don't want to be the decider of who's cool.
What's the uncapped mic? What do you mean?
Well, any number of people can go. Like, sometimes they cap it at, like, 30
comics. Oh, capped.
Yeah. So, like, the Sanjak, for instance, we have a lottery at the beginning, and then it's uncapped. So anybody who shows up can go up. There's no time limit.
Yeah, yeah.
I hated running the Shakespeare's mic because they were like, okay, 10:30, it's over. You got to get the DJ up there.
Right, right, right.
So you'd have 50 people show up. And so then it was like we had to decide who's cool, you know, or, like,
yeah.
or people would be like, oh, well, I get to go when I get to go because I'm this person. And you're like, well, no, you don't. And then, so, like, everybody thinks they're the coolest, you know, where, like, everybody's trying to be really popular and exclusive, you know. I'm trying to go the other way. I want to be unpopular, unexclusive, you know, just show up and, like, do the thing. Like, my goal is to put the time, make the time available. That's it. I'm not trying to tell you about your if you're good or bad or if you're going to make it in comedy or if I think you suck. That's not important to me. I'm going to give you that time, and that's it. So,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
to me, that and that should be as fair as it can be. Like, I'd rather have the whole thing be a lottery, honestly. People won't stay for all that, but...
Right, right.
But my thing is, yeah, get everybody up there who wants to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, comedy is hard enough. I don't need to be one other person telling them something, you know. Just, they'll figure it out on their own, you know, regardless of me trying to keep them... Even if I tried to tell them they were really great, it wouldn't matter. Like, you know...
Yeah, you don't hear a lot of people go, you know who's really holding me back is Elton Sean. You know,
yeah.
I try to do something, he's constantly tearing me down, he's constantly saying derisive things to me. He's a drug addict, alcoholic, pile of garbage. I hear that about a lot of other comics.
Sure.
I've never heard that about you. Somebody's trying to get in. Okay.
All that stuff's true, though.
Who's true? What tries to... Yeah. People try to big time you?
Sure. But again, I'm just like, everybody gets to go up. So,
but don't you know about who I am, Mr. Big Britches?
Sure.
Don't you know who I am?
Well, I usually go, oh, okay. And they're like, haven't you seen me on blah, blah, blah? And I'll be like, yeah, you know, we got this list here. Well, and also, too, there's other shows. That, like, if people don't like that way of being like...
Right, right.
You know, sometimes it is necessary. Somebody's like, oh, I got this other show I got to go to. Then it's different. I'll go, okay, yeah, I'll try to accommodate that. But if somebody's just like, hey, I'm, you know, whoever, and therefore I deserve this, I'm like, well, no, no. You know, none of us do. None of us are entitled to anything as comics, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe later on I would change my tune, but, like, again, this is like an open mic at the upstairs of a bar, you know, on a Sunday. Like, you know, it's just going to be all comics here. So, like,
yeah, yeah.
Why would you even want to big time it? Like, it's just to, like, show the other comics that you can. I mean,
you're a douchebag in front of those other five people.
Right.
What Austin comic did you watch have a rough start where, all right, this person's going around, they're bombing, but they're trying, they're passionate. But then they turn a corner and they start to get kind of good. What comic would you name that you saw, oh, well, when they first started, they weren't good, and now it seems like they got something?
Well, you know, I haven't really been doing it long enough to really think about that. I guess, like, well, somebody who's, for me, somebody who started out fantastic and has just gotten better was that Lucas, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the first time I saw him, I was like, damn, you know, I wish I could be that good, you know. But I don't, like, I'm trying to think who's started out poorly. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, not one of them just, like, jumps out. I mean, to me, it's such an incremental process that, like, maybe in, like, I feel like a lot of the people who start out really bad just don't come back. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I met a guy, I won't name a name, but he was in Round Rock, and he would come to a couple shows, and he was, like, really enthusiastic for like about 3 months. And then he was like, oh man, this is really going to be a time commitment. And I'm not really like, it's never going to make money. And so then he just sort of dropped out. And I was like, he had, in my view, potential, but then he didn't want to pay the price of success, in my view. Like, I don't know. I sat down and when I first started comedy, I was like, this is maybe never going to make money, you know, and that's okay. You know, I still want to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Where other people, they are like, well, I'll try it out. And then they start to realize what it actually entails. And they're like, oh, I don't want to do that. Like,
yeah. Oh, the work? So like, I just thought this was I get to goof off and get attention.
Hey, I'm going to bang my head into a wall for maybe a decade. And I'm hoping at the end that the brick has moved out of the way slightly.
Yeah.
If you like that idea, if that is charming to you, then comedy is for you. Like,
I'm going to name a name, but I'm not being mean. I'm saying I saw this person when they first started. I go, oof, a couple rough sets. Mm-hmm. And now all of a sudden they're getting good. And my vote is Zach Silverman.
Sure.
When I first saw him, I was saying, nah, meh. Now he's like, he just like had a great set the other day. And I was like, wow. And like I watched the jokes evolve. I watched it develop. And it was like a pleasure to watch. It was like, oh, you know, I watched him figure it out. You know, and that's an exciting process for me. I started when I was 16. I'm 35 now. You know what I mean? And so, it remotivates me to watch someone figure it out. You know,
sure.
I love that process. So anyway, shout out to Zach Silverman. Oh, and the Lucas McCrady is his name that you were taught. I think I offended him one time. I don't know. He went up and then I went up after him and I was like, everyone, check out what a androgynous halter top. And then I think he left the venue, the Romo room. And so I was like, oh, did I piss him off? I didn't mean to. I thought I was busting his balls and I don't know.
That's probably fine.
Whatever. I like that guy. He's a funny guy. By the way, Lucas, you're a funny guy. I just, you know, you were wearing a halter top. That's objectively factual.
Well, I also think as far as judging people, like, obviously you want to get laughs and stuff, but, like, everybody needs to be doing it individually. So, like, it's hard to compare people. Like, you can see somebody and be like, oh, man, they're funny.
Yeah,
but, like, if somebody's kind of getting their legs, it's like, maybe this is going to be something. Maybe I just don't understand why.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because there's things that I'll write jokes about, like the coins, for me. People would be like, why would you even start out writing jokes about coins? Like, and then I start doing the jokes, and people are like, I don't get this. This is too absurd. This is too abstract. I don't get it. Now I've got it where it's funny. But like, if you were to watch the middle, like, two-thirds of that, you'd be like, what are you doing? Like, so when I see somebody doing that, I go, all right, I just don't get it yet. Maybe it'll be funny. So I try not to be too like, oh man, these guys are really on the wrong track. Like, because you can't know sometimes.
It wasn't that when I first saw this sex opener, it wasn't that he was on the right track. I just think he was nervous.
That could be, yeah.
Or sort of, well, like if a joke didn't work, he would like kind of panic a little bit. And he got rid of that and just got this confidence. And then everything, then his act just started working.
Sure.
Well, that's just from getting the reps in.
I had 1,000 comedy, I had 1,000 trivia shows under my belt before I ever did comedy.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't have to worry about nervousness or like that part of it.
Yeah.
So like that, when I see a comic struggling with that part of it, I'm like, well, they just have to get over that part of it.
Yeah.
Then they can get on with their work.
Where are you originally from? Are you from Austin?
No, I'm from Northern Michigan. Yeah, from Traverse City. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And how long have you lived in Austin?
Like 3.5 years.
Uh-huh. Did you go to college?
Yeah, I got a bachelor's degree in economics from Grand Valley in Michigan.
Uh-huh. And then how long did you live there before, you know?
Oh, so I lived in Michigan until like 2007. Mm-hmm. And then there was the recession. Mm-hmm. I couldn't get a job. So mm-hmm. then I actually moved out to Utah, and I lived out there and worked at a ski resort.
Oh, that's cool.
And so that was fun. And then still, you know, I'm like, what am I going to do now? So I went home to Michigan, and I did some just odd jobs. And then finally, my brother's like, all the women here have kids or are divorced. We should move somewhere where there's more women to date. So he just kind of picked Austin out of a hat, honestly.
Yeah.
And we both moved down here, and he hated it. And he just wanted to be where he could be out in the woods and stuff. So he moved back, you know.
To Michigan?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So then I'm still here, you know.
He went back to the woods.
Really, he missed it. He didn't realize that he needed that to be happy. I mean.
That's interesting. What was your mentality to do comedy the first time?
Oh, man. I don't know. I was just like...
Was it here? Was it in Utah?
The very first time I did comedy, I did it in Michigan on a lark, probably like in 2005, and I just like went to an open mic night, just did some jokes, didn't really think about it. But like when I was in high school, there was actually a small comedy club in our town, and they would let in kids that were underage, like you could be like 16 and get in, if they would like, you know, mark your arms or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I was seeing like road comics coming in there, you know, like names you never heard of, you know, and they would do their sets. You'd have like a 3-act deal, and I watched that for years. And I was like, man, this is really fun. Then I just sort of forgot about it, you know. Because then again, you never think you can do it as a career. You always think, well, that could be a nice hobby or something. And then I went on and tried to do, like, business stuff. And I'm like, man, I feel like a fraud. Every time I put on a suit, I was like, people can just see right through this. Like, so I was like, fine, so I'm...
You have the suit on. It's just, I don't, something is fraudulent about this.
They're like, he just looks sweaty in it, or he's just, you know, like people, some people, you see him in a suit and you're like, oh.
Yeah.
You know, he's a lawyer. You know, right. That looks right. But then there's a cognitive dissonance when I put a suit on. They're like, this is a clown in a suit, you know. So I was like, well, okay. So then I started doing trivia as a business, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Hated it. I like running it. I like the performing. I don't like running it as a business. So then I was like, well, if I like performing, what are the performing things? And I was like, oh, comedy, stand-up. Maybe I'll look into improv and this and that. But then I just like stand-up. So.
Yeah.
So now I'm doing stand-up.
You're a meat and potatoes kind of guy. What was the biggest bomb you had that changed your life? Like, did you ever bomb so bad where you were like, oh, my God, I got to start doing things different?
Yes. I wrote out this is when they were doing the Round Rock Tavern mic. I wrote out a 5-minute monologue about my dad's friend Steve, and then I delivered it to zero laughs, and I was like, I got in my car, and I was like, well, that's the last time I'll ever do comedy. And I was about halfway back to my house, and I was like, no, okay, you know, I just bombed, that's okay, you know. But I had to change up my style. I was like, just reading it out of my brain is not comedy, is not stand-up especially.
Right.
It has to be more like... It has to come from a different part of your brain, like that you're coming up with it on the cuff, or at least it has to appear that way. It can't just be like you're reading a speech.
Yeah.
So then I had to change up my whole style. Instead of memorizing it all word for word, because I would literally like write it out, speak it into a microphone and listen to the recording like 5 or 6 times and essentially memorize the material, which I didn't know if there were any jokes in there, and then go up and bomb. And like,
you're like, but I did all the words right.
Right.
What, like, what happened?
Like, it's funny on paper, and I look at it, and like,
people, like, I see you in the suit. It's just, I don't know, it doesn't fit.
You know, like, yeah, I don't know. He's like a shaved ape in that. You know, like, but I wasn't in the room at all. I was just in my own head in the speech.
Right, right.
So then I was like, okay, I got to throw all that out. Then I basically started improvising everything, and I was getting some laughs that way, but that's inconsistent. So now I've gotten to the point where I'll actually sit down and write one-liners. I'll write a story out. So I'll use the one-liners as kind of the point, and then, you know, test it out and do the actual, you know, the iterative parts of comedy.
But it's like you got to, like, stay into what's funny about the thing instead of, like, what's the... What was the, like, thrust that made you go, oh, this is funny. Let me stay on the story world of what's funny about this thing. You know what I mean? Then it seems, like, more organic instead of just, like, let me just read this.
Well, like, to me, rattling off a bunch of one-liners doesn't seem right.
Right.
So, like, to me, when I when I'm telling a story, it makes it easier to remember.
Yeah.
So then I'll lace the one-liners into them. And so then I've got the one-liners in there, but they appear to be coming out of the story. They're actually not. They're like, I'm just like bolting them on.
Mm.
So like I have a joke about when I got to be a strip club extra. And mm-hmm. so then I sat down and literally wrote out a bunch of one-liners about strippers. And I add those in. So like I've got laughs in there. So like the story itself was essentially like just interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But now with the one-liners in there, it's enough where people actually laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey. Yeah, we're working on podcasts, so, but good to see you, buddy. What was the what's the best night you ever had as a comedian?
Dude, I went over to do the show at Castro's, and there were like 2 people in the audience and my girlfriend, and I was like, I'm just going to let them have it, you know? I'm a professional, and I'm going to do it, and I was so happy. And then afterwards, the couple, they go up to my girlfriend, and they're like, you're so lucky, and they gave her $20.
You performed for 4 people.
Yeah.
And you got tipped $20.
Yeah.
Wow.
But all the other comics, they were like, oh, there's nobody here. I'm just not going to do my material.
Right, right.
And I felt like happy that I rose to the occasion, kind of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You're like, I'm not scared of you, motherfucker.
Well, I was like, I'm here to do my material. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah. Have you turned into your parents? Are you different than your parents?
Jeez, I don't know. My mom was a painter, so I would say in this sense I'm pursuing the artistic life, I guess.
Uh-huh.
My dad, not mm-hmm. so much.
Have you ever seen a therapist? Did you get a diagnosis?
No. I have some things I kind of self-diagnose, you know. I know some things about my personality quirks, you know. But
What are they? What makes you spiral into... depression? What kind of takes you down?
Well, even I found out I got seasonal depression. So, like, just being here in Austin where it's sunny all the time, I have a fully functional year now. Prior to that, in Michigan, I would have 4 months of just kind of, like, you know, gray and just, you know, wasted time, really.
Do you think that's just from vitamin D? Like, you just need vitamin D to...
Well, I used to supplement in that because that was recommended to me, but it didn't do anything. But just the actual access to the sun made a huge difference. I mean, it seems crazy, but, like,
it's
dark enough up there where it affects everything.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you.
Hey, John.
Hey, Lucas.
How you doing?
Time's getting
to be here. Yeah, we're working on a podcast right now, but...
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Oh, you're good. We were complimenting you, but not anymore.
Yeah. No, we said on the thing that you're funny, Lucas. We like you.
Oh, okay.
Just so you know. What? So I heard a rumor that you used to work in a pawn shop.
That's true.
What did you learn about humanity working at the pawn shop with the derelicts?
Dude, I'm telling you what. People that come to the pawn shop are, in a sense, financially illiterate. We're taking advantage of them.
Go on.
No, it's horrible. Like, you as a pawnbroker, to be good, have to be someone with high empathy, which I am. But then... also, you have to be able to just, like, realize that they're never going to understand how finances work, and just, that's okay. Like, and part of the deal of a pawn shop is you have to listen to the tale of woe, as I call it.
Right,
so
right.
So it's not just a financial transaction. Yeah, they have to unburden themselves, and you as the pawnbroker have to hear it. And so part can be...
I'm selling this because this happened.
Right.
And,
my mistress needs her cell phone paid, and, you know, so I have to bring in this statue that I have of Superman, you know. And you're just like, you are not making up one lick of this. Like, this is really what happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you have to, and you can't really be like, what the hell's wrong with you? You know, can't you, like, save money? Like, you're an idiot. Like, you have to be like... Yeah, it's tale as old as time. You know, it happens to everybody. Yeah, you should have seen. And then you go, this other guy came in, and his story is much worse than yours.
Yeah.
Here's the $20. You know.
Yeah.
So it's a sad. Well, but also, if you talk to a pawnbroker, they would say, we are providing a service to the unbanked.
Oh, the unbanked.
Yeah, people that don't have bank accounts, like don't have social security numbers,
right,
if they're an illegal immigrant, whatever it is, they can't have access to traditional financing. This is like the last resort. And so it's not a great option, but it's better than...
What percentage of the people get their stuff back out of pawn? Like,
oh, almost all of them. They don't want your stuff. They want the interest.
Oh.
They can charge 240% a year.
Huh. You see a lot of drug addicts?
Not really, because like if you see the stuff that's stolen, the pawn shop can't keep the stuff. If somebody reports an item stolen and they bought it, the police confiscate it. So you lost the money and the item. So you don't want to be buying stolen stuff.
So the story part of it is you doing detective work of finding out if it's stolen.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to
use
sort
your
of
judgment.
You've got to look at the guy and be like, is this legitimate? Do they actually own this, like, three Xboxes they're bringing in? You know, if it looks like a bad deal, you just tell them no. And it's not because, like, maybe it is legitimately, like, they're trying to sell, you know, a catalytic converter that they had from their car or whatever. But you have to be like, we're going to lose 100% on this deal if it's not right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we're taking on too much risk.
But you know who I am?
Yeah, right. And you're like...
Big time you at the pawn shop?
They're like, listen, I found this refrigerator in my own house, and, you know, I brought it over. Of course the cord was cut. I had to get it out of there quickly, you know, and you're like, yeah, all right, I'll give you 20.
Well, I'm out of questions. The room is starting to fill up with
trying to
get on the list.
We'll have to do the list, and then we can record a little bit and after I get everybody on the list.
Sure, let's do that. Let's take a break.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to add is I listened to an interview with Jeff Foxworthy, you know, obviously a famous comedian, and one of the things he said in there is that he wants to be a good steward of comedy in the sense that he wants to take care of the art, promote the art, and try to push the art forward. And that really meant a lot to me, and so I'm trying to do that now. I tell people I want to be Austin's number one comedy henchman, and I also want to be a good steward of comedy. So I hope that resonates with you, too.
Well, I said, you know, before, you got good ethics, you got good fairness. You know, you're just, you know, the Papa Bear of the Austin comedy scene. And when I see that you're on a poster hosting, I go, oh, it's going to be taken care of. There's not going to be a lot of work-ins or favoritism or bullshit. This guy, you know.
I want it to go smoothly, and also I think my goal of comedy, obviously I'd love to make a full-time income from comedy, but like, man, if I could get to a point of skill where I could actually move the art forward a little bit,
that
would be, to me, the ultimate success.
Hey, he's a big sweetie, he's a big dreamer, he's got moon pie eyes and an interdimensional heart that sees through the fabric of space-time. Alan Schwab.
And I waste the law of attraction on coins.
let's get to your coin material. It's sort of tough. It's a hazard to do a podcast with you because you're as the comics pour in, they're all like, "Oh, hey, checking in with you. Hey."
Sure.
We're doing a podcast. Oh, sorry. But honestly, I still just want to ask about that. It's like
they're like, "Well, I get that, but can I get that spot though?"
Yeah.
Like, we do the lottery at 6:30. Like, yep, but I'm here.
Right.
Like, well, all right. Well, we'll do. At the Lucky Duck, I actually call it feeding the ducks. I got a bag of numbers, and I'm just like trying to get them out as fast as I can. But it's good too. Like, you know, you got 70 people. There's got to be somebody to organize it.
So yeah.
I think the numbers, especially there, because like you know the show's going to be at least 5 hours, and like you got to do something. Because then again, if you're always getting on way late and stuff, you're not actually getting the same crowd.
Right.
The first 2 hours is literally a different crowd. The last 2 hours is just like slappy drunk time where everybody needs to be really, I tell them, loud, blunt, and dumb. In the beginning, you can have nuance to your jokes. You know what I mean? Like at the end, you just, loud noises, you know, talk about body parts, like, take your dick out.
Yeah,
just whatever it takes. Because, like, after midnight, if they haven't gone home, they want to continue to laugh. They haven't got enough laughs.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
Then, but they're not able to understand what you're saying. So you have to just, like, you're like, oh, man, that was a great premise. Like,
yeah, yeah, real physical, real, like.
Just like, yeah, you animal, yeah. They're like, oh my gosh, this guy's awesome. Like,
yeah, yeah, you're all pieces of shit. That's when those jokes start working out. Oh, this is the worst audience in the world.
Well, after I've had two beers, I call it the translator, you know, because, like, I need to bridge part of the gap into their sobriety. Like.
It's so funny. I used to, like, have this girlfriend, you know, and she would, you know, we lived together for, like, 4 years. And I'd take her to my comedy shows all the time, and I would see her, and she would be smiling, but she would never laugh, right? She would pull up YouTube, right, and be like a dog is like, mama, mama, on the floor, dying. And I'm like, I can't compete with that, a dog talking?
Right.
That's universal. I mean.
Can't beat it.
No matter what crafts I put into my joke.
Well, I found that the funniest thing ever is fart noises.
Yeah, that's good.
So there's nothing funnier than a fart. And, like, at my trivia shows, I thought the trivia people are too highbrow for farts. I found that's not the case. In a 2-hour show, I played as many as 40. And people can't get enough of it.
Like, you had, like, a sound board?
Yeah, so I made this one. It's called a Jingle Palette. And I have a board of just farts. And I like...
Oh, different pitches and...
I'll be like, oh, it's getting a little windy out, guys. And I'll just, like, hit the fart.
Yeah.
That's the funniest thing anyone could ever say. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. All right. In 1937, who won the Academy Award for fart? You know,
and they're like, "What is this?" Like, but again, it's like the universal joke.
This guy gets it. He gets it. He's on top of it.
Dude, the owner of the bar at the Barton Springer Saloon now, what he'll do is he'll walk out in front of the stage and pretend to pick up a penny, and then I play the fart noise. And he just thinks that's the best. Like, yeah, it is, yeah, and everybody laughs, and they're like. Oh man, I wish I could be the owner of this bar and do that. Like, it's so, but also it's like, it's not really an offensive thing. Like, anybody can laugh at that.
Right? Yeah, because it's not everyone does it. So you're not hiding that from anybody.
Well, a lot of my material is like that. I'm not trying to make a point. I'm not trying to, you know, change your mind. I'm not trying to pick a controversy. I just want it to be silly, absurd, you know, light. That's it. You know, I'm not trying to do. I want it to be entertainment. You know. I'm not trying to be controversial, really. So, you know, that's good and that's bad. Some people, that's not interesting to them. And then other people are like, I just want to unwind. Just tell me the jokes, clown. You know?
Yeah.
I'm like, that's who I want. I'm like, you're here to have fun. I'm here to have fun. I'm not here to make a point or make you think. I just want you to laugh. Yeah. Like, so that's been, I don't. But again, in my regular day, I'm not trying to think about, I don't listen to the news. I don't read controversial things, you know. So, like, I'm not going around thinking about whatever happened today. I don't know what it was. If somebody physically tells me a piece of news, that's me getting the news.
Right.
Like, I just don't do it because it's, like, again, it makes me depressed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I studied economics. So, I used to think I needed to be informed. You don't, in my view. You know, if you can either be informed or happy currently. That's the kind of the state of it.
Yeah. I do sometimes bridge that gap where I try to do, like, more, like, edgy jokes. Like I had a joke in one of my specials where I say, like, you know, there's no money, like, there's no gold in Fort Knox. You know, our money used to be redeemable for silver. Now it just says a Federal Reserve note. And just in that setup, I saw people, like, falling asleep or, like, you know. Even though where I was taking the joke was, I think the best way to back up our currency is to have our currency based on blowjobs, then it would never lose value.
Sure.
But just in the setup of doing this economic, like, I'm just saying facts about our currency, and they're like,
you just watch the eyes go dark.
Yeah, so I should have just been, like, making dog noises or had a fart machine during, like, the setup.
Well, like, when I talk about chewing, okay, that's a thing that's a universal topic that's so dumb, it's below the level of analysis. but also, it doesn't go bad. The joke is always, it's evergreen. It doesn't rely on a current issue or topic to make sense. It's like, this is a body function. We're going to have that
for
the existence of humanity.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, I try to write something like that where, like, it will never go bad.
Yeah.
Because, you know? Again, I'm going to have this joke maybe work for a 2 or 3 year period.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then if it's a universal topic like that, you know.
Yeah, there was this comic in New Orleans, like, during, I don't want to say bad things about it, but, like, during the Trump administration, he's, like, doing Obama impressions. And then he's doing, like, you know, like Cosby from the 80s, like ignoring the rape stuff. And it's just like, you're still doing, you know what I mean? It's like, you gotta update it.
It's
and
not then, current at all.
And like, it's two presidents ago, or it's like 30 years ago, 80s Bill. You know, what about the allegations? He's doing like pudding shit. And it's just like, dude, like, this is rough. You have to.
Well, and even my stripper story isn't really about the strip club. It's that I'm a fish out of water.
Yeah.
I'm an actor. I'm trying to be asked to be an actor, and I'm not an actor.
Oh, yeah. I just think, like, when you're doing pop culture stuff, that pop culture stuff has to be current pop culture stuff. It can't be pop culture stuff that's, like, clearly dating you. But, yeah, I like evergreen material, you know. But then, yeah, you could do it forever, and it's relatable. And my big pet peeve is when comics talk about movies, like, remember the movie Ransom, right? And then he gets the money, and then they run over here. It's like, the scene from fucking 20 years ago as the movie came out. Now you're talking about minute 35 of the 20-year-old movie. It's like, I just, like, now with Netflix and Hulu and YouTube and this and that, you cannot, it's not like everyone goes to see the movie Jaws in America.
Yeah, you can't keep up with it. Like, there's not a single, like, the Tiger King was the closest we'll ever come again to, like, something everybody watched. Because, yeah, everybody's is so specific to their niche. So, like, for trivia, I used to write questions about The Simpsons, because I'm a big fan. Nobody watched that anymore. Or at least it's very small. So, like, it's not in the realm of general knowledge anymore.
Yeah.
Same with the jokes. Like, if you haven't seen the movie Cliffhanger, this joke's not funny to you.
Right, right.
So then it's like, okay, well, how many people have seen it? Well, if they're over, like, 40, probably everybody. If they're under, they don't know what the hell you're talking about.
So, and I so prefer a comic to say, you know, my mom yesterday, then the movie, you know, Die Hard. Remember the first Die Hard movie? No. Well, remember this scene? No. So it's like, it's like you're losing 90% of the audience as soon as you bring up it. But if everyone, you know, people know about dads, they know about father figures, so that's a relatable topic that gets you, like, right into the consciousness.
Well, and people will always have dads. So, like, I mean, theoretically, we could go to cloning or whatever. But there again, that's something that's so universal that it will never expire.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's the way to go.
Anyway, I have some plugs for you.
Oh, good.
The San Jacques Saloon, every Sunday. Sign up at 6:30. The Lucky Duck, every Wednesday. Show starts at 8. Probably get there at 7 for a spot.
We'll get there at 6. We start at 6.
Any other plugs?
Well, so Monday I do a trivia at the Barton Springs Saloon. Tuesday I do a trivia at the Lucky Duck. Also, I've been playing a lot of Connect Four lately, so I'm taking on challengers. You see me around. I bring the board with me everywhere. I'm like a gunslinger, you know. I can't leave the house without my pistol. Like, and then I've been at Boredom Busters on YouTube. I've been doing that, so that's my sketches. So, doing a lot of stuff.
Great. Go to ericalderbach.com. We have a sponsor for this podcast. It's called ACBD Remedy. If you go to ACBD Remedy, buy some cannabis oil, use promo code ERIC for 20% off. Go to ericalderbach.com, click on the calendar. I always update where I'm at. Also, the Highway Diary podcast, you're listening to it right now. And you can click on the stand-up special tabs. And I have three stand-up specials on YouTube, Conspiracies and Dick Jokes, Fart Porn in Beer Halls, and It's a Medical Device. This has been episode 302 of Highway Diary with my beautiful friend, Eldon Schwab.
That's cool.
Thanks for doing the podcast, buddy.
All right,
let's do this mic.